initiative so that's completely ignoring the laboring classes and marginalizing and excluding the Kurds. So that's what the mainstream opposition did. So the only way to keep Republican ideals alive in Turkey is through integrating Kurds and through mobilizing labor.
Professor Cihan Tuval, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Professor of Sociology, University of California, Berkeley. Author of The Fall of the Turkish Model, How the Arab Uprisings Brought Down Islamic Liberalism. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Angie Caron. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rose, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Far down, all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland City Council votes today on a possible camping ban.
Oregon Senate Republicans hope to thwart Measure 113 and the will of the people.
And in international news, a rocket carrying a North Korean spy satellite crashes into the sea.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland City Council members just heard public testimony on whether or not to adopt a broad ban on outdoor camping on public property across the city. Here's some of the commentary from Edward Johnson, Director of Litigation for the Oregon Law Center.
I understand that I'm not going to be able to persuade you to do the right thing here today, but this ordinance is the wrong thing to do. Life is very hard for people who are living outside, and this ordinance is about to make it even harder. This ordinance will not solve the serious problems that this city is facing. It will make those problems worse. We know what works: supportive housing, rent assistance, tenant protections, and supporting people, keeping them stable when they are outside. This law cuts against all of that. It will destabilize and criminalize our neighbors who have been forced outside, and it will waste money that could be spent toward these solutions.
That was Edward Johnson, Director of Litigation for the Oregon Law Center. Now, initially, the council was supposed to vote following that testimony, but now the vote has been postponed. The policy, which was updated to meet the terms of a 2021 state law, reverses the city's prior stance against criminalizing homelessness. Oregon House Bill 3115 governs camping. It sets up reasonable times, places, and manners under which houseless persons can temporarily camp in reasonably safe locations while they seek access to more stable housing. The proposed policy, introduced by Mayor Ted Wheeler, prohibits camping on any public land between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. It also imposes limitations on where people are allowed to camp and what they are allowed to do while camping during the other 12 hours. While Portland already prohibited camping on public property at all hours of the day, the rule was rarely enforced. Now, if they are able to find some legal place to set up a tent at night, houseless Portlanders will be prohibited from starting a fire, using a gas heater, littering and selling bikes or cars at their location. Campers will also be limited from using more than 10 square feet outside their tent to store belongings. If people violate any of the new rules, they will be given a written warning from a Portland police officer. If they violate them a second time, they will receive a second warning. Once someone violates the camping policies three times, they can receive a fine of up to $100 or get sent to jail for up to 30 days. Portland's policy would go into effect July 1st. Portland is just one of many Oregon cities adopting new anti-camping guidelines, including Eugene, Salem, and Springfield. Wheeler's office said its proposed policy requires that police officers offer people who camp illegally space in a shelter. That wording is not included in the policy draft. However, if there are no shelter spaces available, the responsibility still remains on the unhoused person to relocate or face penalties. According to Multnomah County data, the county currently has 2,000 shelter beds open to the public, and around 90% of those are usually occupied. The county's homeless population on any given night is estimated to be more than 6,200 persons. The vast majority of Portland area shelters, by the way, require a reservation or specific referral to get in. Homeless women represent a population that is disproportionately vulnerable to abuse while living outside, and they are even more disadvantaged by the policy. Wheeler said the policy pairs with the city's work to open up more shelter spaces. His staff have previously characterized a camping ban that comes with criminal penalties as the last resort for addressing the city's homeless crisis.
75% of 500 likely Multnomah County voters polled recently agree with the poll's characterization of Portland area homelessness as, quote, an out-of-control disaster. 71% say they support Mayor Wheeler's proposal to ban people from pitching tents on public land anywhere in the city between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. and restrict camping around the clock near schools, shelters, and other specified locations. The poll was funded by People for Portland, a two-year-old group which has raised and spent more than $1 million, primarily from a small group of wealthy and mostly anonymous donors. Only 25% of those polled said that treatment for people experiencing mental health or substance abuse disorder should be voluntary, while 67% believe, quote, we need legal tools to encourage and compel people to get help. 64% of those polled Multnomah County voters believe county leaders should fund all types of sheltered programs, including those that require people to stay off drugs and alcohol. The poll, which has a margin of error of 4.4%, was conducted by GS Strategy Group, an Idaho-based firm with longstanding ties to Republican candidates.
When it comes to the debt ceiling deal, not all legislators are on board. Florida election law is coming under fire, and an Indiana licensing board rules on an abortion case. With these stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Speaker McCarthy had a mandate from the American people with a powerful negotiation position of a unified Republican Party, not only just in the House, but in the House and the Senate, to hold the line for the bill that we passed. This deal that we've heard about totally fails to deliver on all of it.
Pennsylvania Republican Scott Perry said he and the 44 other members of the Freedom Caucus will not be voting to pass the debt ceiling deal negotiated between President Joe Biden and Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy. Some Republicans indicated they might remove McCarthy from being Speaker as retribution, but McCarthy is confident it will pass and that he'll remain Speaker. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell urged members of their parties to pass the plan and avoid a default. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is confident it will pass, but notes Republican support is faltering from a promise to deliver 150 votes.
What we all are interested in is how many votes are the Republicans who negotiated this resolution going to produce. Initially, we heard that 95% of the House Republican Conference supports the agreement. That doesn't appear to be the case.
Voter advocacy groups have filed lawsuits against Florida's new election law. Along with restricting third-party registration groups, it narrows deadlines and increases fines for late submissions. Esty Connor with Demos, a racial justice think tank, argued the law restricts people from being involved in civic affairs.
Really what this law does is it is an attack on the ability of Floridians, regardless of their immigration status, to participate in the democratic process of civic engagement.
Montana environmental advocates say a new law allows the state to ignore climate change impacts when developing large-scale energy projects like coal mines and power plants. The measure builds on a decade-old law prohibiting the state from including actual or potential impacts that are regional, national, or global in nature in environmental reviews of big energy projects. Ann Hedges with the Montana Environmental Information Center says the measure leaves natural resources completely unprotected.
You are telling the public and you are telling the state their rights don't matter, that they don't really have a right to a clean and healthful environment, and the state has no obligation to protect people from the very real dangers of the climate crisis.
And an Indiana licensing board fined Dr. Caitlin Bernard $3,000 and gave her a letter of reprimand after going public about a 10-year-old Ohio rape victim having to travel across state lines for an abortion. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
An ongoing walkout has shut down action in the state Senate for nearly a month. Two members, Tim Knopp and Brian Boquist, say Measure 113 can't stop them. Under ballot Measure 113, approved by voters last year, any lawmaker with 10 or more unexcused absences is barred from running for re-election for at least a term. However, questions remain as to when that rule applies. Republicans have recruited a Portland lawyer to help clarify that issue. John DiLorenzo, an attorney with Davis Wright Tremaine, sent Acting Secretary of State Cheryl Myers a letter asking for a formal determination on whether Measure 113 actually grants lawmakers an entire extra term before penalties kick in. DiLorenzo said, quote, Senators Knopp and Boquist intend to appear on the May 2024 primary and November 2024 general election ballots. You must therefore determine whether they will be disqualified from serving by virtue of his having accumulated 10 or more unexcused absences as a result of Measure 113, end quote. Opponents argue that Measure 113 contained a key drafting error and does not do what voters expected when they overwhelmingly approved the law. Voters were told that a yes vote would ensure truant lawmakers can't hold their seat for the term following the end of the current term. Republicans say that's wrong. The actual text that Measure 113 inserted into the Oregon Constitution says that lawmakers with 10 absences can't hold office for the term following the election after the member's current term is completed. But elections in Oregon are held before a lawmaker's term expires. Boquist and Knopp are scheduled to end their current terms in January of 2025 after the 2024 election. The election that occurs after their current terms expire is in 2028.
The letter to Myers states, quote, it appears from the unambiguous text that if they are to be disqualified from holding the office of senator, it would be for the term that begins in January of 2029, end quote. It asks Myers to issue a ruling that Senators Knopp and Boquist are not disqualified from serving as state senators for the term commencing in January of 2025. Interestingly, Measure 113 saw no pushback from Republicans. Margaret Olney, the attorney who wrote the measure, said judges considering the matter would look to what voters intended. Olney said, quote, for ballot measures, that legislative intent is the ballot title and explanatory statement, and that language could not be clearer. Legislators who walk off the job are disqualified from holding office the following term, end quote. DiLorenzo said he is not necessarily representing conservative lawmakers in a lawsuit, but added a challenge would likely be made on First Amendment grounds. Conservative senators say they believe Measure 113 punishes walkouts, which are protected speech. A spokesman for Myers did not immediately respond when asked whether the secretary would issue a ruling as requested. Elections officials have already asked the State Department of Justice for clarity on exactly how Measure 113 should be enforced.
Census data shows our Hispanic population has made dramatic gains in a variety of educational ventures. Daniel Smith tells us more.
In Tennessee and across the country, the rapidly growing Hispanic population made remarkable strides in college enrollment and educational attainment, according to a recent analysis by the U.S. Census Bureau. the number of Hispanics ages 18 to 24 enrolled in college increased to 2.4 million in 2021. Emily LaBandera with Excelencia in Education says its mission is to accelerate Latino student success in higher education. This came about from its knowledge of the community and the data that's tracked with the census report that the Latino community has been growing for decades in the nation.
The future of our country for an improved workforce, civic leadership, the economy, and really looking ahead to the future, this is an important community and group to pay attention to because of those key statistics and population demographics.
LaBandera notes some of the networks of institutions that they partner and collaborate with are Hispanic-serving institutions. She says they created the Seal of Excelencia, a national certification for colleges and universities that strive to go beyond enrollment and more intentionally serve Latino students in order to become institutions where Latinos thrive. LaBandera emphasizes their website includes a Latino college completion interactive map that shows state-by-state data, including D.C. and Puerto Rico. She says it looks at enrollment metrics, population demographics, completion, and degree outcomes. She adds they are working on a series, Finding Your Workforce, which will focus on three specific disciplines.
In STEM-related disciplines, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, in the healthcare field, as well as in education. Those are key disciplines, key areas that we've noted Latino students earning degrees in.
LaBandera adds the group is also working on four different reports that are coming out later this summer that will show additional information on degree attainment for Latino students at Hispanic-serving institutions. Recent analysis from Excelencia in Education found that Latina students at Hispanic-serving institutions earned more than 300,000 degrees in 2020 and nearly 120,000 more than their Latino counterparts. I'm Danielle Smith, Tennessee News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio, which features an in-depth report on why Oregon's forests need your help. At 6, it's Code Pink Radio. At 7, it's the Magical Mystery Tour. Then at 8, Ditch Digger. Tonight's weather will be a little cloudy with a low of 47. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 75. If you recognize that music, it's from the classic movie All the President's Men, because today in history, it was in 2005 that Vanity Fair revealed that Mark Felt, an FBI officer, was the source behind the Watergate scandal known as Deep Throat. The quote of the day is from Watergate reporter Carl Bernstein, who said, quote, "The great thing about Watergate is that the system worked. The American system worked. The press did its job."
North Korea's attempt to put its first spy satellite into space failed today. It's a clear setback to leader Kim Jong-un's push to boost his country's military capabilities and to apply more pressure on Washington and South Korea, as diplomatic efforts appear to be stalled. A newly developed rocket was launched from the northwest, carrying the satellite. The rocket crashed off the Korean Peninsula's western coast, following the separation of its first and second stages. North Korea vowed to conduct a second launch after it learns what went wrong. A satellite attempt by North Korea is a violation of UN Security Council resolutions, which ban the country from conducting any launch based on ballistic technology. North Korea's previous satellite launches apparently helped improve its long-range missile technology. North Korean rockets have the potential to reach all of the continental United States, but their nuclear missiles are not particularly functional. Adam Hodge, a spokesperson at the United Nations U.S. National Security Council, said that Washington strongly condemns the North Korean launch, which raised tensions and risked destabilizing security in the region. The United Nations already imposed economic sanctions on North Korea over its previous satellite and ballistic missile launches. However, China and Russia, Permanent Security Council members, blocked attempts to toughen the sanctions. Seoul's military says it boosted military readiness and coordination with the United States, and Japan said it was prepared to respond to any emergency. The U.S. promised it will take all necessary measures to ensure the defense of South Korea and Japan. The satellite is one of several high-tech weapon systems that North Korea has publicly vowed to introduce. Other potential weapons include a multi-warhead missile, a nuclear submarine, a solid-propellant intercontinental ballistic missile, and a hypersonic missile. South Korea is expected to launch its first spy satellite later this year.
Some high school students aren't letting First Nation students wear their tribal regalia at graduation. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Schools are coming to an end across the U.S., and graduating Native high school students who want to wear regalia at their ceremonies, in many cases, are not allowed to. In California, a law protects the right to wear tribal regalia at graduation. Christina Onnested reports.
California's first Native American lawmaker, Democrat James Ramos, is reminding the near 1,000 school districts and 9,000 schools across the state to respect Native students' rights to wear tribal regalia at their graduation ceremonies.
We urge local school administrators to know the law and respect the rights of our Native American students and to celebrate with them and to honor them in allowing them to move forward with their constitutional right to wear tribal regalia.
His statement comes after former chair of the Concow Valley Band of Maidu Indians, Jessica Lopez, said she had to argue with school district officials about her son's right to wear regalia at his graduation. California lawmakers passed legislation in 2018 allowing tribal regalia in most cases at graduation ceremonies. In 2021, they passed another bill to establish a task force educating school districts about the legislation giving students that right, but some districts still are unaware. For National Native News, I'm Christina Onnested in California.
A Cochiti Pueblo artist opened a new exhibit in Colorado called Virgil Ortiz Revolt 1680-2180, Runners and Gliders. It looks at the Pueblo Revolt of 1680 in a futuristic light. Emma Vandenindy of the Mountain West News Bureau shows how it's making an impact on visitors.
The exhibit opened to the public this month. Jeremy Morton with History Colorado says, this is unlike anything the museum's done before, pushing the boundaries of how history can be taught.
Someone who's maybe not a history person, maybe not a history buff, is able to look at this exhibit and create this association of, wow, I didn't realize history could be told in this cool way.
It's left an impact on some visitors like Ader Toon, a college history professor in Denver. He's Yucatec Maya, and he says he struggles to remind himself that his people are still here.
I think this exhibition brings this idea that we are not just here, but also we are modern. We are part of the future as well.
Kat Lovato, who's part Jicarilla Apache, also came to see the exhibit. She came dressed to the event in traditional clothing.
Everything that Virgil does that has an emphasis on the indigenous population and the wars and everything, it matters to us.
She hopes exhibits like these educate people about indigenous history. People like Emmeline Shirotis, her 8-year-old granddaughter.
I love learning about our family's history, and people need to know.
Virgil Ortiz, the lead artist on the exhibit, agrees.
Every time that people talk about indigenous people, it's like in the past, right? So I just want them to acknowledge and know that we're still here living, thriving, creating.
He hopes that other indigenous communities can join him in his mission to highlight their prevalence in Colorado and throughout the region.
I really want them to come speak up and tell their history, all of their ancestors, and be acknowledged of that we're all still here together.
Virgil Ortiz Revolt, 1680-2180, Runners and Gliders, will be on display at History Colorado until the end of next May. For National Native News, I'm Emma Vandenindy.
Suzanne Schoen Harjo was one of five people to receive an honorary degree from Princeton University Tuesday during its 2023 commencement ceremony. The advocate, poet, and president of the Morningstar Institute was honored for her lifelong work advocating for Native rights. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
New North Dakota laws allegedly harm the LGBTQ plus community. Mike Moen has more on the story.
Human rights voices are calling attention to new North Dakota laws deemed hostile toward LGBTQ individuals. They say it's part of a movement led by national groups and that it doesn't align with how the state governs itself. The recent legislative session saw North Dakota and its GOP-led legislature take a big leap into so-called culture wars by passing laws such as one that bans gender-affirming care for transgender youth. Jeff Witrowski of the Human Rights Campaign says in the U.S. there's been nearly 1,700 of these types of bills in the past decade. He says organizations such as the Family Policy Alliance are working hard to get them passed in conservative statehouses.
These organizations have a worldview that just does not comport with a pluralistic society where LGBTQ people are allowed to live freely and not be discriminated against.
In 2021, a trio of these groups joined forces to fund policy efforts, citing the need to protect children's bodies and minds. Witrowski says they often have template legislation for lawmakers to use while pledging to help pay for legal costs if a state ends up facing a legal challenge. Local opponents of the movement say it runs counter to past arguments from those who decried the influence of outside groups in trying to craft North Dakota policy. In 2020, a proposed ballot initiative that aimed to bolster election access was criticized for the involvement of out-of-state groups. But Witrowski says these LGBTQ policy efforts are largely driven by organizations with addresses outside of North Dakota. He notes such groups also are active in backing candidates who are receptive to the movement.
In the midterm elections last year, we tracked over $60 million in spending on attack ads that attacked transgender folks. The bulk of those resources was spent in Republican primaries.
Megan Langley is with the organization Strengthen ND, which focuses on helping rural areas thrive. She says while her group isn't involved in these policy debates, she agrees with some sentiments that they can serve as a distraction. She feels North Dakota does better when the state looks inward to address more pressing issues.
Some of the noise created during particular legislative times can take away from what's going on within communities, and it removes folks away from who their neighbors are.
Groups such as the Family Policy Alliance could not be reached for comment. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael. Tonight, Dan sees war everywhere.
Large-scale drone attack on Moscow Monday, but the real war isn't in Ukraine or Russia. It's in the supermarket, at the gas station, wherever we shop. The war of corporate profits against basic human existence. With near monopolies for most basic goods, there's no competition in prices. We'll spend what we have to spend, borrow what we have to borrow, as increasing prices bring higher interest. There aren't sinkholes just at Cape Kiwanda, but everywhere you look. Last week, I paid $20 for a Reuben. A not-new 900-square-foot house in not-that-great of a neighborhood for $325,000? Note to Mayor Ted and Governor Tina, you don't solve housing problems by letting developers write the rules. Meanwhile, the other major war, humanity versus the natural world and the planet, is buried behind news of succession and debt ceilings. We're unwilling combatants, can't consume little enough, can't rebuild the consumptive system we're mired in. Can I have just a tiny piece of peace? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, tips, and other compelling strings of words at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team tonight includes Dan Raphael. The producer for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Mike Moen, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vera, and Danielle Smith. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by amazing folks like you, our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio and have a great night. Yeah.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio, a production of the Coast Range Association. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. Oregon manages over 500,000 acres of state forest land. That land is every bit as public as national forests, but historically the state and the timber industry has treated it as just another timber plantation. But that's finally changing, and right now, the Oregon Board of Forestry is considering a habitat conservation plan which would set aside almost half of that land for long-term stream and forest habitat conservation in the most critical areas of our state forests. This would be a huge win for salmon, steelhead, and other endangered species, and provide a major source of temperate rainforest carbon sequestration when we need it the most. Unsurprisingly, the timber industry has launched an all-out misinformation campaign to stop this habitat conservation plan, even though it would still allow for logging in much of the state forest. And that's where you come in. Your voice is needed here, and there are many ways, big and small, for you to use it. If you're inspired by this conversation today, please go to forestlegacy.org to learn more and get involved. That's forestlegacy.org. And share this episode with your friends. Okay, to break all of this down, I'm so excited to be joined by Bob Reese. Bob is a sixth-generation Oregonian who has worked for decades as a professional fishing guide and serves as the executive director of the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association, and has been an advocate for fish and wildlife conservation for just as long. Well, Bob Reese, welcome to Coast Range Radio.